Welcome to Badass Banking. And today, hey, you can't laugh. Now, one of my guests is laughing at me already. Today, I'm with Natalie Bartholomew, who's Bartholomew, right?
Yes.
Who is the chief administrative officer at Grand Savings Bank. And that is, where in Arkansas is that?
So we're in Northwest Arkansas. We're actually chartered out of Oklahoma, but we are close to the state line. So we're in Northeast Oklahoma and Northwest Arkansas.
Okay. How close are you to Jill Castilla?
Three and a half hours.
Oh, okay. You guys ever get together? Because you guys got similar personalities.
Yeah. A couple of times we have. We actually have a joke, and this would kind of out us, but we've talked about doing a podcast only under, like, to be anonymous so that we can say more. And so no one would know that it's us, but we thought that would be some really good content. But maybe one of these days we'll do it.
I think that could be a lot of fun, and I'm happy to moderate that one.
But okay,
I can be incognito too.
Okay.
Tell me a little about the bank first, like how big you guys are, and then let's also talk about how you got into the space.
Sure. Yeah. So Grand Savings Bank has been around since 1981. We are close to, I think we just reached the $600 million in assets mark. We're growing fast. We have 12 locations in Northeast Oklahoma and Northwest Arkansas, 12 locations in Arkansas, 3 in Oklahoma. A lot of us that are here in Arkansas, we always like to say that we're an Arkansas bank, but you know, our roots are in Oklahoma. So we have a lot of good football conversations, having some SEC representation, and then you've got OU and OSU, et cetera. So that keeps things fun and light. But yeah, definitely in growth mode. We've got a really fun group here. Our hashtag is Life is Grand. We use that for basically anything that we do in terms of hiring, firing, making decisions. If it's not making life grand for the bank and our employees, then it's probably not a good thing to do. So anyway, it's been fun. I've been here for about 3.5 years. I came in as the chief marketing officer and now over human resources, strategic planning. We relocated and kind of reinvented our customer care center. So I headed that up, and that's over here in Bentonville as well. Recently took over innovation, which I know is a fun topic for you, and anything else that's on fire, I enjoy getting to deal with here at the bank. So my title now is the Chief Administrative Officer. So it's been fun. I've been in banking for close to 20 years. It'll be 20 years next March. Started when I was 18 as a part-time teller in high school, and the rest is history. So I'm a third generation banker, so it's always been in my blood.
Oh, that's neat. So talk about the generations. It was your mom or your dad, or?
It was actually my mom's side. So my mom's father was a vice president at a bank. It was Arvest purchased it. I'm sure you've heard of Arvest.
Oh, yeah.
In my hometown. And he was there for 45 years. And he was your classic shake your hand kind of guy. You know, everything was done with a handshake. There's a lot of really funny stories about him. He passed away in 1997, so I hate that we didn't get to have conversations. Obviously, him in retirement and me getting started. I was only in ninth grade when he passed away, but I did work at that location after Arvest bought it for 12 years and got to work with a lot of people that worked there with him. So it was kind of cool to bridge those two things together. But he was the kind of guy that, you know, he took you for your word, and that handshake meant everything. I don't know that he would like banking as it is now. So that's why I'd love to have those conversations with them. But his nickname was Squeaky. And so everyone knew Squeaky Thompson at Farmers and Merchants Bank in Prairie Grove, Arkansas. But my mom worked there for a period of time until she had my sister and I have a twin sister. And so, and we also are farmers. So fifth generation family farm. And she worked full time on the farm with my dad and had us. And so I kind of took it from there whenever I started as a part-time teller.
Wow.
So it's kind of an interesting story. My sister never had any interest in it. It was always me. I loved to play bank when I was a kid. As nerdy as that sound, I liked filling out forms just the weird kind of stuff like that. I just knew that
I wanted to do. We used to play store, and I was I did the inventory and cash stuff, and my sister stole from me. And then I had to play the role of loss prevention.
There you go.
So that, yeah, that's a great story. I always like to know the background. I think, and that's one of the things I'm trying to do on this whole vlog thing, is talk about the people behind the brands. Because, you know, you're out there on social. You and Jill both represent smaller financial institutions.
Yeah.
You're doing it right, right? You're highly engaged in the marketplace. You've create great personal brands because you care, right?
Sure.
And you're demonstrating that life is truly grand, and you're making a place in the marketplace for your financial institution. There are a lot of people that are keeping an eye on you. Plus, you're the chief firefighter based upon what you just described.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's what I should suggest changing my title to. That may be more appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you ought to take like a paramedic program or something like that. You get like, you know, the helmet and the axe and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the girl banker. How did that whole thing come around? I know I've spoken to a lot of people, and I don't know how much you know this, but you inspire a lot of people.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I'd love to hear that. You know, it's kind of crazy to think about, actually. And you mentioned being passionate about something. That's really how the Girl Banker was born. I was at Arvest for 12 years, and after I'd been there for 12 and then went to another organization here in Northwest Arkansas and was there for 3 years. And was introduced to the people here at Grand Savings. And so that's kind of how I ended up here. And it's interesting, that really goes back to the importance of networking and who you know, and you just never know when different opportunities will come your way as a result of making those connections. And so that's how I ultimately landed at Grand Savings. But there was kind of a period of time before I started making some of those transitions, where I had actually become really complacent, and I'd always known I was going to be a banker, wanted to be a banker, became a banker. And then you start having those, like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? You know, is this really where I'm supposed to be? Even took Praxis tests. I had a master's degree, but took Praxis tests to be a high school finance teacher, which would have been a disaster, because I'm not cut out to teach kids.
But we do need that, right?
Yes, we do. We need some
financial education in school.
And that's, I think at the time, that's what I thought. I was like, I've got the real world experience. My oldest was actually 3 at the time. And I thought, oh, I could have more time with him and be on his schedule when he goes to school. And just kind of had one of those moments in life where I was really just kind of evaluating it all and questioning. But had the opportunity to be the marketing director and a private banker at First National Bank of Northwest Arkansas. And so I was there for a number of years and kind of got out of that complacent mode, but just realized I was meant for more. There's more meant for me in this space. And it's not just to be at this bank, while important, but also to have a larger voice. Because of that transition to FNB, I started having the ability to go to more conferences and started recognizing there just weren't very many women, specifically young women in those conferences. And so it was a little disheartening. I had become connected really well to a friend of mine, a fellow banker, who's the chief operating officer at Chambers Bank here in Arkansas. She went to banking school with me at Graduate School of Banking in Colorado, and we connected and were best of friends immediately. And so we kind of shared that same frustration of like, we're it, there's no other women. And so that kind of started the questions of why, like, where are all the women specifically? You know, I can understand why no young women want to be a part of this. There's a huge barrier of entry, or appears to be. And so I had started really, that's kind of the period of time, about 2016, 2017. It was after the birth of my youngest son, who's now 4, where I started really working on my Twitter presence and just started following a lot of bankers, banking associations, different people in the industry, had found Jill and was really inspired with what she was doing in the community banking space. And so anyway, that's kind of where it started. And then the transition to Grand Savings happened, which was really, that was go time. So it was not only this opportunity to step into a C-level role, But to have the ability to really create who I was in the banking world. A good friend of mine, Allison Twiggs Dyer, who is the Twiggs agency at Twiggs Group, was my marketing agency at the previous bank and came along with me here. And she was like, you should really think about blogging. And I was just like, what am I going to talk about? You know, what do I have to say that anyone is going to want to read? And she was like, well, you're creating this social space, which she had really helped me with. She was like, you know, you're a working mom. You've got this passion for women in banking. No one else is doing that right now, specifically women in banking. And so maybe there's something to it. And so one day we kind of were sitting there and she's the one who came up with the name, The Girl Banker. And it was kind of a play on girl boss, which you were hearing a lot at that point in time. And so we were like, okay, let's do it. And so she kind of connected me to a couple of people. I got my logo from Etsy. I just had a couple of freelancers that helped me with my website. I kind of handled all the social on my own. I'm still just a one person team. I don't have an assistant or anybody helping me. It's all me. And it was a lot of work, but started working on some blog content. My work-life balance or working mom post was the first one. I remember my husband and son were gone to deer camp for the weekend, and I was home by myself watching Netflix, and I just got my computer out and started typing away. And that was kind of the intro. And it connected and resonated with not just women in banking, but, you know, working women in general, or even stay-at-home moms. You know, we all have this different struggle and this different tug. And so anyway, specifically for women in banking, though, it was to realize that there was a need for advocacy. There was a need for a voice, not only just to help support all of us that are in this space and to help get our boards more diverse and the C-suite more diverse, but also to tell young women that there are tons of opportunities in financial industry for young women. It doesn't have to be, you know, the staunchy loan officer position or bank teller, you know, that's kind of old school. I mean, there's technology, there's business development, there's marketing, there's all these different things that you can do. So to kind of tell that story to young women, I would go speak to schools and to high school students. And I would leave and want to just hit my head against a brick wall. Like, I don't think anyone heard me. No one is interested. But I would always say, who in here is interested in going into banking? And you might get a couple of people raising their hands, but it was always the boys. And they always thought, well, that's where the money is. I'm going to make all this money. And so I was just like, there's so much work to be done. There's still a lot of work to be done. But it was exciting to kind of get the blog up and going and have the opportunity to introduce young women to this industry, to highlight young women that are getting started, to kind of create a community of sorts. One of my favorite parts of it is I have a private Facebook group for just women in banking. Awesome. And so it's around 3,000 women from all over the country. And it's a real safe zone. There's no press or no vendors are allowed in there. It's just women in banking for the reason so that we can share frustrations or ask questions about experiences or, hey, does anyone have this policy you can send? And it was really picking up, but when COVID hit, it took off. And so it kind of became a constant, like, what are you doing in your branches or what are you doing with this? And so it's been really helpful through this time, but it's really created a great community in addition to kind of the blog part or the speaking engagement part. And that's ultimately what it's all about, is to have that community. Yeah. It's a long answer to your question.
No, it was a great answer. And I don't think people understand the value of collaboration or the amount of collaboration that's actually happening behind the scenes in the banking and in the fintech space. And part of what I'm trying to do, and I've always been trying to do, at least since my Geezio days, is try to connect that dot between fintech and and the bankers,
right,
or the credit unioners, you know, and ultimately, you know, that digital experience, that human experience are going to collide. And that's what's going to make banking more interesting and more valuable, right? And the brands that get it, the brands that are truly developing that collaborative spirit are the ones who are going to succeed. Tell me about the farm for a minute. So, you know, I've got a farming background. My cousin Chuck, who I now call Tony Randall, he's about to hit 60. He's the Farm Bureau, former Maryland Farm Bureau president.
Okay.
And he owns a farm I call him Tony Randall because he's 59 and just had a baby.
Oh.
Well, he didn't have the baby, but his 29-year-old girlfriend did.
Yeah.
So I think the farm is doing something right. I don't know. But yeah. So tell me about the farm.
Yeah, so the farm was established in 1860, and part of the Battle of Prairie Grove during the Civil War was actually fought there on the farm. My great-great-grandmother, West, actually, well, they, all of them there, witnessed the battle, but she actually provided the home that my dad grew up in, which has since been relocated. It's still not far away. And then I live in a house that is in that same spot now, was used as a Union hospital.
Wow.
During the war, which is just kind of a bizarre story in itself. But yes, that took place right there on our hillside, and it has stayed in our family ever since. My dad was the youngest of four children and was the only one that had any interest in the farm. And has kept it up and going. And so my husband and I live there and our two boys, and it's the best of both worlds. I have an hour and a half commute to work. It depends on traffic, but I mean, I'm pretty rooted there. So, you know, the drive to work is just part of it. I've got flexibility, but on the farm, it's great to be able to go home to that every day. It's been great that the boys can be raised there. They are big farm boys. So we do Bermuda grass hay. So they're always very, very involved in hay production. My four-year-old can tell you all the stages of hay production just like that. So he's really into it. And we have beef cattle. So my husband and I were high school sweethearts. His parents are also from our hometown. They were high school sweethearts. My parents were high school sweethearts. It's one of those stories. But his family had a livestock auction in our county for 75 years. And so he's a big cattleman and has kind of rejuvenated the cattle production on our farm as well. And so we raise cattle. And my dad started raising chickens for Tyson when he was 19. And raised for 40 years. And we did Cornish hens, and they're gone. So we're done with poultry production now. But again, just kind of like in banking, diversification is key on the family farm. It's a pretty cool story to be able to say that both my mom and dad worked there, you know, that there was no off-farm income supplementing the farm going on. And so that was a wonderful experience for me growing up to learn work ethic. And I mean, I had to pick up dead chickens, and I've helped work cows, and you know, I've done all of that stuff and drove a tractor. And so I think that gives me some good depth. I definitely hope it makes me multidimensional and not just the banker side. But I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. And especially during this crazy time for my boys to be on the farm and have that space to run and play, we're kind of in a bubble there. And, I'm very grateful for that. And definitely know that I'm privileged to have that opportunity for them too.
Yeah. My cousin has told me all about the reason behind diversification in farming.
Yes.
He was working for Pilgrim's Pride for a long time. He had 42,000 or 37,000 head of turkey.
Yeah. Chicken. Yeah.
And they went belly up. And
yeah.
He went back to dairy, and then he went to Black Angus, and he's now a steak farmer, as I call it.
Yeah.
Plus ice cream,
yeah.
Dairy, you know? And yeah.
Dairies are hard too.
dairy is very hard. You know, they had to throw away, I forgot how many tens of thousands of dollars of milk they were. So what he did is he took it up to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. He had a guy turn it into cheese.
Wow.
That loss and an $80,000 profit. And he brought some of the cheese this week. And let me tell you, that is some good cheese.
Yeah. We had, it was the ice storm of 2009, and everything was on a generator at the time. And anyone Northwest Arkansas remembers this. It was just the craziest thing. But we were without power. It was time for, our chickens should have been picked up, but the trucks couldn't get there. So they were bigger than they should have been. The generator tripped. And so this is after a week or two being on the generator and diligent about that. I mean, my dad is just a Mr. Fix-It. He can, there's really not much that he can't do.
You have to be. As a farmer, you have to be.
And to be efficient and not have to hire people to come fix things. I mean, if it's broken, he will figure out how to fix it. So I'll never forget the morning that the generator tripped. And because of the size of the birds, it was actually like 60 degrees that day. It was really bizarre how it was ice. And then the power was out for forever, but it was really warm. But we lost 50,000 birds that day. Wow. So it was a rough day. And again, diversification. We were big Bermuda grass hay production. And then you've got cattle. So that's why you have to have, you can't have all your eggs in one basket, literally.
I think it'd be really important for everyone to spend a little time on a farm.
Absolutely.
You know, you would learn some. Growing up, I learned how to use a manure spreader. We opened it up on a state highway because my cousin thought it'd be funny.
Yeah.
You know, I was 12. And then, you know, I learned about soybeans and, you know, all kinds of fun things back then.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure. I love what you're doing. I love what the bank is doing. Please keep it up. You know, you're building a great brand there. And more importantly, you're building a voice for all the women out there.
Thank you.
That know that there's an opportunity in banking. And it's up to men to make sure that we pave the way and we don't create the barriers. Unfortunately, through history, I think we have created those barriers. For those of you out watching, hopefully there's some of you, like, subscribe, dislike, comment. This is all about engagement and collaboration. That's what we just talked about, right, Natalie?
Right. That's right. Exactly.
All right. Good talking to you.
Thank you so much.